Brian, you've walked into a hornet's nest, but I feel like you've handled worse. Good morning, sir.
Morning. What are you guys whining about?
Well, we're discussing about how, to me, I was just saying that I think it's more important than ever to really hit the number with your top picks when it comes to the draft now. Is that fair or foul?
Gee, do you think?
Thank you. That's Brian Burke, everybody. We'll talk to you next week.
It's a hard cap system. And it's not just drafting. There's two important steps. You've got to draft well and you've got to develop well. And if you don't, you have no chance in the system. You have no chance to plug the right holes at the right number in a hard cap system unless you draft and develop.
But how much has the drafting and the scouting process changed? Because at the end of the day, you're dealing with, 18-year-old kids, and you just never know how they're going to handle it. And you've said on the show, there's been times where it didn't work for you, and there's other times you've hit the jackpot. I mean, has it gotten...
Well, it's not like buying a car. You're drafting a human being. And so you're subject to the frailties of that human being. And so you draft an 18-year-old who discovers beer. And then you draft an 18-year-old who discovers girls. And those two things have wrecked more careers than everything else combined. But so you do your work. The teams that have had success have drafted and developed well. You can't argue it's luck. You can get lucky on a pick. You can take a guy in the fifth that turns into a star. But in your first three rounds, you can look at the percentages and you can say the teams that are successful have drafted well and have developed well. There's nothing wrong when you look at Nashville's a great example of how many of their guys spent time in Milwaukee in the American League on the way up there. So you're right, Perry. It's hard to do. They're human beings. They're subject to the normal frailties and injuries and failings of other human beings. But the fact is, teams that have done well in the hard cap system, NFL included, have drafted and developed well.
At the end of the day, Brian, on a Friday night before the draft, if you guys have two kids that are really close, is character a big deciding point? I just think this guy handled it a lot better when we talked to him. We're going that way.
Well, everyone says, I think it's really a misused or overused term, or actually a disingenuously used term. Everybody says we care about character. And in fact, everyone spends some time on it. I've always felt it's a single biggest thing, that no matter how good a player was, if he lacked character, he was never going to make it as a player. So to me, we spent all my teams, and we didn't get it right all the time, obviously. We spent way more time on that, on the researching the kid than most teams. And my view was the number one evaluation tool is eyeballs. We got scouts. We watched them play, watched the kids play. We got assistant GMs. We got the GM. We watched the kid play. We project him into an NHL uniform. Boom. My favorite story about seeing a kid and changing my mind about him right away, or making up my mind about him right away, because I'm not a great judge of talent. There are guys in our business like Mark Bergman, Rick Dudley, Bob Murray, I think were great natural judges of talent. Dale Talon. See a guy once and they can tell you he's going to play or he's not going to play. Sometimes I got to see a guy six times. And it's amazing to me how much better, and I worked so hard to get better at it, but those guys just had it. It's like some guys can hit a golf ball without a lot of effort. But I went in to see R.J. Umberger play at Ohio State, and Ryan Kessler was a freshman his draft year, and he played one shift. And he was pinballing around, knocking people over. He was a great bow-legged skater. And I sent Mike Petty a note. I said, where do we have Kessler? And he said, early second round. I said, move him up. And I think we took him at 20. So sometimes they leap out, yeah, sometimes you're right, sometimes you're wrong. Jason Herter, we drafted him. He had a physical problem that no one knew about. He kept popping his groin. And finally, we brought him in and x-rayed him, and his hip socket was not properly formed. So instead of a ball and socket, he had a tube and socket. Whenever he would pivot to turn outside, his hip would dislocate slightly and pop his groin. Nothing they could do about it. Doctors couldn't fix it. So it didn't show up on anything we did. I think he would have been a hell of a player. So it is a crapshoot. And I drafted Chris Pronger second overall in 1993. Who went first?
Alexander Digg.
So you look at that. Look at the Sedin's first round.
Patrick Stephan.
It's a dog's breakfast.
Yeah.
It's a dog's breakfast. Barrett Jackman and a couple other guys were the only, and I always mentioned Barrett because I really admired the way he played. I always accept him. You know, there were very few players that were quality players in that draft. Second round was actually better than the first round.
Well, I mean, you look at
you could say, how do trained professionals get things that wrong? Well, guess what? It's because of what you said, Perry. They're human beings.
Well, and you look at that draft from the 99. I think Radim Vrbata just retired last week, and there was one of the highest-scoring players from that draft, and then Henrik Zetterberg as well. Brian Burke with us here on Sportsnet 650. I don't want to sit here and pump your tires too much here on this one, but you look at the NHL scoring leaders right now. Morgan Rielly tied for the NHL lead with 10 points, the North Van product. You know, there were a few people. When you were general manager in Toronto, you know, some people thought it might have been a reach because of some injury concerns, but what did you see in Morgan early? Because I think if you do a redo now, he'd probably be the first pick of that draft if you were to do it over again.
Well, there's a couple guys that went after him that have played well too, but what Morgan Rielly hurt his – he had surgery, blew out his knee, whatever he did his draft year. So he didn't play many games, and he played at the end of the year. And I couldn't get in to see him. I want to say he played 11 games. You guys can look it up. He played a small number of games.
Mm-hmm.
And so I couldn't get in to see him based on my schedule. But we had hordes of scouts watching him. Like, we had six guys at one game, and which is crazy. We never do that. That's a waste of assets generally. When you have six guys, you want them in six different buildings watching that many different players. But we had a horde there because we really liked this guy the year before. And I had our video guy with the Leafs cut out every shift that he skated that year and put it on a disc and show it to me. So I saw every shift Morgan Rielly took that year, and then I watched them again. And first off, the skating leaps out at you. Even coming off a knee injury, his skating was elite, and we don't use that word very often. His hockey sense was excellent. His decision-making was excellent. His pass and shot selection were excellent. The only thing he didn't seem to have was a real big shot. He didn't have a real hard shot, but that's something that you can improve. So we had him rated number one. When we drafted him at five, I told him, I said, we had you number one, and that got picked up on TV somehow. And then people, the idiots in the media, started saying, well, he just said that. And he probably says that to every first-round pick. And I'm like, no, I didn't tell Nazem Kadri we had him first, because we didn't. I told Morgan Rielly we had him first. Our scouts, John Lilly, Dave, all the scouts in Toronto had it right. And so did we pump his tires and say, hey, we had you number one? We had him number one. And someone can ask the scouts, Dave Morrison, to produce his draft list, and you'll see we had Morgan Rielly number one. You don't tell a kid that if it's not true.
Yeah,
I'm really proud of how he's done. I don't know if this scoring thing's going to hold up. But I will tell you this. I think it is, because I think this team here in Toronto is going to score a lot of goals.
Well, I talk about character a couple of times. We've had him on this show, Brian. He just seems like a really nice, humble young kid. So it's good to see.
He's a great kid. Great family. Vancouver area, great family. Dad's a great guy.
Francesco Aquilini is going to join us in studio at 8 o'clock. As a GM, what's the conversation you have to have or do you with an owner, what the Canucks and Jim Benning would have done with Sam Gagner? You know, admitting a mistake and going, we're going to have to send him to the minors. Does the conversation take place?
Yes.
And
I mean, the owner has the right to.
Sure.
Owners own teams, and owners have the right to say no to significant financial decisions. The smart ones don't.
Mm-hmm.
They don't interfere, but they have the right to say no. And what you do there is you go to them and say, and by the way, I think last year, or 2 years ago when I was in Vancouver, or when I was in Calgary, I think Edmonton had $5 million in the minors. Last year on the Calder Cup winning team, the Marlies, I think, had $4-plus million in the minors, maybe five. So this is not in a hard cap system. When a young kid makes your team and you've got someone in that box who's a veteran, now that one way has to move to the minors. And unfortunately, it's Dave Gagner. But, yeah, you have to ask the owner, say, look, it's not so much you made a mistake as one of your kids pushed him out of the box. That's what usually happens. And then you see, go to the owner and say, look, we're going to have to stick $1.5 million or two. What's Dave Gagner's salary, 3.5?
Yeah, Sam Gagner. Yeah, he's just over three. Yeah.
Sorry, Dave played for me. Sorry, Dave and Sam. I apologize to you both because Dave played for me.
Oh, they're both good
and
guys.
And I like Sam. But it's, you know, you go to the owner and say, we're going to have to eat $3 million in the minors. But in a hard cap system, that's almost the cost of doing business. They hate one-ways in the minors in Calgary, but they've had to have a couple the last couple of years. So if you're right, if you draft right and the kid pushes a kid out, that's what happens.
Have you ever had a moment where you tried to do that and you got yelled at by your owner?
Oh, yeah. But that's their right. The owner, it's his money.
Yeah.
I've had some really nasty discussions with owners over the years saying, well, it's especially hard when you take over a team and now you want to send a guy to the minors that you didn't even sign.
Is there an example?
I'm not giving you an example.
Well, tell us this. Did you win them all or did some guys stay and you wanted them to go?
No, we were going to make a trade one time in Anaheim, and the owner said no. He said, look, I'll never overrule you on a hockey decision. The Samuelis are wonderful to work for. But he said, this is $1 million in cap space that you don't have and you didn't budget for, so I'm gonna say let's do something else. That's their right. They write the checks.
We got to wrap things up, but I want to ask you something that I've thought of, and being Canadian Thanksgiving, it hit me on Monday as I'm cooking the bird, and it was great. I travel with you and the team for 3 years, and a lot of times during American Thanksgiving, we were out east. Was that by coincidence with your family out in the Boston area, or that just happened to be come late November the Canucks were out east?
No, that's Turkey with Berkey was what Tommy Larshag called it. We didn't ask for that. We didn't ask for that game. We were on a road swing, and the Bruins play virtually every Friday after Thanksgiving, an afternoon game. And we got scheduled to play in that afternoon game, and everything was closed in Boston. So I got a Greek restaurant. I lived out in the suburbs. I got a Greek restaurant near me, excellent restaurant, to open up on Thanksgiving and serve the guys a really nice turkey dinner. It was fantastic.
So it was pure coincidence that Brian Burke teams were usually out east during American Thanksgiving.
We only played in Boston once, I think.
Well, and we were in Detroit once. I know we went to a game. We always seemed to be out east at that time.
Well, Detroit's out east. In your mind, that's east?
Yeah. I'm on the west coast,
well,
pal.
That ain't east.
It's central. Central. That's a true westerner right there, Berkey.
Thanks for the geography lesson.
You guys, anyway, that was just the 1 year we had it. No, I didn't. The league doesn't consult teams on scheduling. If they did, you'd have better schedules. Look at the schedules.
I just think
the major problem I have with the NHL is how they do the schedule. And the western teams get screwed big time. Like right now, the Flames are on a 3-game road trip. And they started in Nashville. I think they're in St. Louis tonight, and then I think they go to Colorado or something. That's a lot of flying to play 3 games. You go that far, you should get to play 4 games and take one more road trip out of it. My last year in Calgary, and I know I'm running over here, but you guys give me one more minute.
Maybe.
They flew us out to play Toronto and Montreal back-to-back, then home. So we flew all that way. And that is East Perry. Look at an atlas. We flew all that way, played Toronto, got on a plane, played Montreal, flew all the way back. Had one home game and then flew to Minnesota for 1 game and back. Like, Minnesota's not close to Calgary. It's not like you could confuse those two places. Not a bus trip. It's a 2.5-hour flight. So the wear and tear on the players and the cost to the teams, it's about $30,000 a block hour to fly with Air Canada jets. So you take the 2.5-hour flight to Minnesota, you're talking, and they usually round up, you're talking $90,000 for a one-way flight and then fly back.
So then you got two Alberta teams. One goes to China and the other one's in Sweden to start. So,
well, that's different. They're trying to build those businesses, but the regular season travel is really taxing on the western teams, and it's, I think there's a better way to do it.
Sportsnet 650.